In my mind, what we all need to be a little bit more is a third thing, which is to be more self-compassionate.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to another episode of Popping the Bubble. Today, this is a special edition because we are in quarantine edition. I am going to be talking to Dr. Vedrana, NYUAD's counselor, about the different effects of being in quarantine can have on you, and what we can do to deal better with the whole situation. So thank you, Vedrana, for being here and having this call with me.
It's absolutely my pleasure. Thank you, Mal, for inviting me.
Just FYI to everybody who's listening, the audio will sound very crappy, but that's because we're having a Skype call and, well, everything is being virtual now, so just bear with me. So today, Vedrana, I want to talk to you about just what effects are likely to happen on us being quarantined, because it's obviously something that we haven't experienced before. And there's a lot of advice going on out there on how to deal with the quarantine. A lot of not only posts by doctors on LinkedIn, but also on Facebook, memes being shared around. So I'm just curious to get your perspective as an expert, as an experienced counselor, and see what advice you have for us as students to deal with the situation better. So just to start us off, what are some things that we could expect to happen to us mentally when we socially isolate? Is there a process that we'll go through, like the five stages of grief, except with the five stages of isolation? I don't know, first we're still motivated and then slowly go insane. How will this affect us?
That's a very good question. I wish there was a formula, but I'm afraid there isn't one. All those stages, yes, definitely there are stages that we all go through, but they are very fluid and they're not super well-defined, I'd say. We all have our baseline, moods and levels of resilience and whatnot when we enter any hardship situation, and so is with this one as well, right? So if somebody was already in their baseline highly anxious, or they were in a life phase that made them feel highly anxious and then they actually went into social isolation because of the current situation, they will definitely reach some sort of a negative peak earlier, than somebody who was a little bit more calm and grounded entering the situation. So it's also about how you enter the situation. Who are you with? Who are you not with? And are you going to get that so-called cabin fever very soon, very quickly? Are you going to maybe have some sort of a honeymoon phase with yourself and your friends and think like the first couple of days are amazing and then everybody starts fighting? So we all have different reactions. And I think what's really important is not to be too stuck on, okay, this is how I'm supposed to feel, but just really allow yourself to feel whatever you're feeling on a given day or a given part of the day, any day, and then just try to, minimize the kind of spillover effect or ripple effect of whatever mood you're in.
Right, that's wonderful. You mentioned cabin fever. Can you explain to me what that is?
Well, being in a confined space, no matter are we now in our own apartments, like I am at the moment on campus, which is bigger than a dorm room, for sure, and probably I'm more comfortable. But, we can equally get sort of a little bit claustrophobic, because it is eventually, we're surrounded by walls and they, seem smaller and smaller as the time goes by. So that cabin fever effect of just feeling stuck, feeling that you cannot leave, and feeling that every day is the same, forgetting which day it is. I might be speaking, from my own experience now. Okay. I know it's Monday. It's Monday, right?
Yeah, it's Monday.
Okay, thank you. So then kind of becoming a little bit more hazy, not so sharp anymore cognitively, which is really not a pleasant feeling, especially if you're in a highly achieving, demanding academic environment, such as our university here.
Right. So I think that is something that I have noticed. Luckily, in myself, I still haven't reached that point of not knowing what date it is. But I did have it during the weekend. I didn't know whether we were Friday, Saturday, or Sunday, which was when I decided to take those days off. So I can relate to a certain extent to that. You mentioned that, especially when days are very monotonous. And I was wondering, given the... It's very interesting to me see the dynamic of how days for us can get very monotonous, yet the whole world is changing so much. The outside environment is so uncertain. So I was wondering if you could speak a little bit about what is the role of uncertainty in our lives, and how does that contribute to us being stuck in here, and how this type of outside uncertainty is affecting us?
Yeah, uncertainty is known in psychology as one of the most difficult feelings one can struggle with. And we all struggle with uncertainty as human beings. So it's kind of a common human struggle that we're all experiencing. We're all also in some sort of race trying all lives long to create certainty. Whereas all we stumble upon is uncertainty, right? Now, in this case, it's a collective uncertainty, which means that it's massive. It's more massive, but it's also more connecting between people, right? So you are also in the same uncertainty I am in, only it's affecting us differently because we are at different stages of life, and how this will all play out will affect all of us differently. But we are experiencing the same uncertainty because the whole world now is united in that, unfortunately. We like to, as humans, predict what's going to happen. We want to know what's happening, even if it's a bad thing. So then we can actually cope ahead of time. We can get prepared. So this is a human, like basic human instinct, so to speak, in order to, be able to cope with difficulties. That's why our brains are also wired, since very early stages of mankind, to worry. And the main reason for that, and to be a little bit anxious. We have a very worried mind in its core because we're always, as humans, trying to predict danger, trying to be prepared to, stay safe and whatnot. So that's why now we're experiencing that main and major challenge all the time, 24/7. And the answer right now, that just creates more collective uncertainty. It's very hard to bear.
Yeah, it is very crazy, especially when you just mentioned that even the world leaders don't know what's going on, how to deal with it. It certainly feels a little bit scary, but yeah. At the same time, you don't feel it if you are not experiencing it firsthand. If all you're doing is staying at home, it's very crazy that you're not feeling it, but yet you're still very, very scared. So moving on from this topic, how do we... with all this uncertainty that is happening, with the cabin fever that we might get to experience, how do we, quote unquote, can stay sane during this social isolation? How do we keep ourselves from losing our minds?
Yeah, it's so important not to lose our mind. I always say to everybody and to myself, that's not an option. We have one mind, it's precious. It needs to last, for a long time. So we need to be self-protective, we need to be really focused on our own little routines. You just mentioned earlier, the whole world is changing outside, but on the inside, we can reinstate some, sense of normalcy that is only familiar to us or to people that we're living with. And so we, so to speak, mimic normal life within these four walls that we are in. And the priority is to stay healthy physically, because without the physical health, we are, more exposed to getting sick, but also we will be more mentally unstable. So it's really, really important to stay physically fit. And then mentally, we just have to be, you know, very mindful that this is a very difficult situation, that it requires more energy from us than usual. And then when we don't have enough energy, like, you know, any time in life that we feel a little bit more tired or overwhelmed, then we start thinking and being more selective. What do I waste or spend my energy on? So it's just a bit about, you know, being a bit more selective. Who are the people that we are communicating with? What are we paying attention to? What are we saving energy for? And also sticking to our own mental routines, you know, things that we know make us feel good. Like you continue to do your podcast because it's such a nice thing for you. You're passionate about it, but also it's really helping other people. Which brings me to this really ultimate sort of source of sanity, preserving sanity at this time, is focusing on others and helping others, because it can even make us feel happy in these very, very uncertain times. Just reaching out to people and offering support. There are so many ways to do it despite physical distancing. And, you know, it's really important that we focus on others. And it helps us kind of get out of our own head when it becomes a little bit too much. So I just say, reach out and just show you're there, and it will also make you feel good.
That's beautiful. I think that's a great piece of advice. And I would encourage anyone who's listening to actually go reach out. It almost feels, I read a book, and it talked about how, in order to, it gave more general advice on how to deal with life and how to try to do the separation on the things that you can control versus the thing that you can't control. And I think we've had this conversation, you and I, before. So it really seems now that a good thing to do, little things that you can control and focus on, like you say, giving yourself a sense of to others, which I think that's beautiful. So you kind of touched upon this next question that I'm going to ask slightly by answering this one. Okay. But a big part of me being isolated has been that I went back onto Facebook. And I've been seeing this debate kind of happening online between people saying this is the best time for you to be productive. You know, take advantage of the self-isolation and be productive. Network. Update your LinkedIn. And on the other hand, I see this other side of the debate saying, no, stop thinking about being productive. This is the best time for self-care. This is the best time to focus on yourself, introspecting, meditating, you know, calming yourself down. So I wanted to know, based on your perspective, how can we identify what's best for us? Because I can assume that everybody's going to have their preference, but how do we know what's best for us?
You know, we are all in our own right experts for ourselves. And so we know when we are thriving, we also know when, you know, we are down. Some of us are more, some of us are less productive on average. Now, let's not expect that now everybody will, you know, do amazingly well and just magically become this champion of productivity in self-isolation. You know, I don't want to say that that's going to happen. In my mind, what we all need to be a little bit more is a third thing, which is to be more self-compassionate, you know, to kind of understand and acknowledge and accept that we are struggling, even though maybe we don't want to acknowledge that or accept it. It's really important to say, hey, this is a really weird situation. I think weird is a very good word for this and in general. It's a very weird situation. Nobody really knows how to handle this. You know, you can talk to many psychologists right now. We are also all trying to figure this out. We are all experiencing this as well as humans. And I also apply this to myself, you know, because I'm like, okay, I need to be able to, you know, transition to online counseling. Who cares? It's important I do my job. It's different. Of course, I struggle in the beginning. It's not the same. I'm, you know, trying to make something out of nothing, you know, even with my experience and sort of confidence that I have through that experience. So we're all in some sort of, we're all a little bit beginners in this. And you know, when we are beginners in something, we need to have that patience for ourselves and sometimes even laugh you know, about our own little mistakes and just find it funny, you know, the little things we can't do them or we forgot or whatever. So I would promote self-compassion, and productivity is important, but let's not, you know, go into perfectionism. You know, let's not go into, because, you know, what that, like what you said just before, yeah, update this, update that, you know, like kind of make your CV look amazing. How long will that take? You know, like maybe a few days and then what? You know, so like we all have to be realistic, like how productive can you be in an environment where like there's not much to do? You know, people are cleaning, people are cooking. These are venting, you know, all those things in a very small space. That's amazing. So staying active, but also not putting too much pressure on ourselves to achieve, you know, I don't know what exactly at this time. We just need to survive this mentally and physically and minimize the damage and then move on. That's all that is our goal. We don't have to be champions of, you know, quarantine or self-isolation. That I don't think that should be a goal.
That's amazing advice. I wholeheartedly agree. I love it. And so related to that, you just talked about you moved to online counseling sessions and well, all of us have moved on now to online classes. Do you have any tips or tricks on how to stay concentrated when we work from home or even when we're working from our rooms? Because I find myself struggling with that. I was paying so much attention when I was in person, but now, just with the online classes, it's a tough cookie there.
It is. And, you know, I want to validate that, you know, through my conversations with our students here and also my own observations, I guess, of myself, my own children who are now doing online school. It's really, really hard because it's different. This is not classroom, you know, it's you and your screen. Some tips are to sort of decide where is your working space. You know, for example, for me, I had to pick my bedroom because, you know, I have children, so I cannot be in any common areas if I'm trying to do therapy that is confidential. So normally as a mental health professional, you don't want to bring any of that to your bedroom, yet here I am. And so, but I kind of made peace with that, and I have a desk and this is where I sit, and actually you can see me. And then, you know, when I'm done, and I leave it there. And I kind of arrange this desk a little bit differently, so I have things that I need. And I would suggest people should pick a corner in the room, even if you're sharing a room. You know, half of the bed should be working area, and then half of the bed should be, you know, like to relax. Or like half of the room, you know, you can even like, I don't know, draw a line and go like, okay, when I cross this line, I'm going to dress up and I'm going to, you know, be professional. I'm going to be in it and the laptop is there. And then, you know, bed is Netflix and chill or whatever. So we all have to like now reinvent those spaces as well. What really helps is to maybe get out of your bed, maybe get out of your pajamas, even if you're not on the screen, pretend that it's real. And then, you know, even kind of make notes, you know, with your hand, like handwritten notes, even that you're not going to use them or whatever. It's just going to keep your brain a little bit more focused, right? Have some water, have whatever, you know, you need coffee next to it so that, you know, like you're kind of ready and you're engaged. And then focus on the content, not the form. I think that's really important, the content. What is your professor saying? What are others saying? And then you will have a bit of that feeling that you are together and that you're engaging and that it's meaningful. But if you focus on, oh, why is this on the screen? Why is the, you know, like the resolution not so good? Then, you know, you lost it. Okay. So it's more the content and less the form or the format.
I really love the way that you've broken it down. I had not thought about it that way. Focus on the content, not the form. Mm-hmm. I think I'm going to write that on a post-it and keep it now next to my screen every time I'm I'm having the online classes. No, and I think it's great advice. I read on this book. It's a really good book. So I would recommend it to anyone who wants to take the time to read stuff that will help them out. It's called Deep Work by Cal Newport. And he does talk in part of it. He basically tries to break down how to get into the state of flow and be able to focus on something and get in that flow state for a longer period of time. And he also talks about breaking down the spaces in your house, even if you only have a small room, like a lot of the students who are still in NYUAV might have, or students who have gone home who probably have their families outside and they only have inside of their bedroom. And I agree with you. In the book, he also talks about breaking down the space and giving it, even if it's through special time, say from 9 till 12, it's going to be your work desk. And from 12 to 3, it can be relaxing, you know? So I think that's awesome advice that is very, very useful. And speaking of families, a lot of people will have, students who are in NYUAD or even in New York might have roommates that they're kind of, quote-unquote, stuck with as of now. And a lot of people who are home will have their families, which spending time with family is great. But some people would argue that spending a lot of time with family can sometimes feel overwhelming. So how can we navigate keeping our personal space and not growing tired of each other if you are living with someone through this self-isolation period?
Yeah, same rules apply in those situations, which is, you know, it's great to be together, but then we all need our me time and we need privacy. So if we are now suddenly, till further notice with one or more people, and it's really difficult to be alone or almost impossible, we have to sort of maybe negotiate and create space for ourselves, or at least that we feel that, you know, like it's okay not to engage, even if you're in the same space, like you're in a double, room and your roommate is there and you are there, you know, like you're not leaving, everybody is staying in their room, but you can be, you know, on your side of the room and they can be on their side of the room. And, you know, you're just doing separate things and you are not engaging with each other and nobody's getting angry or feels abandoned. Same as if, you know, suddenly now you're like living with your parents and siblings again. And then, of course, there's a honeymoon phase. Everybody's happy. We're together. And then you're like, okay, I'm not used to this. They're also not used to having you for that long. So we have to kind of find a ways to get out of each other's ways. And then sometimes also engage in common activities, you know, like play a game, cook something together, do something for each other. For students who are now living at home, have younger siblings, who are also now struggling with school, you go and help them, you know, help your mother or father in the kitchen, you know, help clean. Then say, you know what, I need to be in my room for a while, have that solitude, recharge, then go back to the common area again, right? So we're all, you know, trying to compromise now. And I think, again, if we are compassionate with each other, that we will find more patience and more tolerance for each other. But it is a very difficult thing to navigate. I acknowledge that. But what really works also is radical acceptance, as we call it in therapy, which is like you don't ask yourself anymore why. Why is this still then? But you go, you know what? It is what it is. I am where I am, and I'm just going to do this the best I can.
Radical acceptance.
Yes.
That's great. And then on the other hand, if people are on their own, so their roommates have left back home, and now they're kind of feeling lonely, how can they make up for that lack of social interaction? How do you deal with actually being alone through this isolation?
Well, you know, social media. I mean, here we go, digital world, that you're all trying to do less of that. And now, like, we should all do more, I guess. So now that's okay. That's allowed, you know, to be overly consuming social media. That's why now they are correcting the term social distancing into physical distancing and promoting social connection. So social connection can be in person, and you know, you can be in the same space. But most of our social connections now, the world is such, even without the virus, that we, you know, we have to connect differently through social media, through digital technology. You know, look, now you're in LA, I'm in Abu Dhabi, we're talking, you know, so that's all our new reality, and it's wonderful. So now we take advantage of that, we maximize it. Now, when we are alone, we can get into that, you know, like self-pity trap. We've all been there. So instead of sitting there and thinking, oh my God, everybody forgot about me, nobody's even calling me, they all have each other, I don't have anybody, and then, you know, everything just becomes so much more worse. How about make a list of people for each day? So today I'm going to reach out to so-and-so and so-and-so, you know, two people, three people. Set a goal. Be the one to reach out to others, because then you're like, it's two in one. You are getting something out of it because you are connected. You don't feel alone. And you might be actually really helping those other people. They might not have heard from anybody for a while either. You know, so now it's about that extra effort one needs to make, even when we are alone, instead of waiting there and getting frustrated and kind of feeling sorry for yourself. That doesn't help at all.
Right. And it goes back to the point that you were saying earlier about actually reaching out to help people and focus on others.
Yes.
So yes. I love that, taking a proactive approach. Something that I've seen also online a lot is this idea that extroverts are going to suffer in isolation more than introverts, and that even introverts are there, they don't even know that we're in an isolation period. Can you comment on this just very quickly, whether it is true or not? It's more from my curiosity.
You know, I love it. I knew like something with extroverts and introverts. So you guys have to talk about it. Like I always laugh about that in therapy. And I'm like, why are we stuck with these two terms? This is crazy. Look, like I said, it's very normal. Yes, you know, we maybe some introverts already have skills, you know, that they develop due to their personality and their preferences, you know, to be really to feel actually okay being alone. And, you know, extroverts, of course, you know, they need to feel connected and, you know, have attention and give attention and all of that. However, this is a very specific situation. And I think it's very important, no matter our personality, to know also how to be alone and to be our own pillar, you know, to be our own support. Because it's also a very natural state of being for a human being, is the solitude, partially. The only problem now is that it's imposed. Now, it's different when we choose solitude, right, versus social time. And then it's like, you know, today I actually feel like staying alone and just not talking too much to people, whatever. But now it's like, well, no matter what I want, this is where I am now, because, you know, I don't decide anymore. So that can put people on the edge, right? So people who are used to spending long hours, maybe studying in their room or working in a lab, for them, this will not feel as bad in the beginning. But then the psychological effects of confinement will kick in at some point, you know, because it's not your choice and because you don't have a choice. We all react the same to that. Nobody likes that, okay? So introverts, extroverts, we don't like when things are imposed. And now we're all in that same situation. So I think we all kind of have to hang in there and struggle. But then, you know, extroverts can be more chatty, you know, through social media or whatever they want to use. And introverts, maybe they will just, you know, find more ways to be alone in a quality way. Or maybe they will also, you know, develop some other skills and connect with others as well. But I don't think that one, you know, does it better than the other. I really don't want to say that.
That's beautiful. That's amazing insight that I definitely don't see going around enough. So thank you for answering that question. Now, aside from the personality questions, there is a lot of information going on from earlier about uncertainty and how that plays a role in our lives. How can we strike a balance between staying informed, so keeping updating and reading the news, versus getting our distance in order not to panic? Because there's a lot of scary headlines out there that I think can affect us psychologically.
Look, that's an excellent question. Really amazing. And it's a question also that I struggle with every day as well. Because, you know, we at this time, we have to stay informed because decisions are being made and we're actually being informed about how our lives will be affected day in, day out. And sometimes it's even per hour. We get information about lockdowns. We get information about the rules in different countries, different rules. We have to know what's going on so that we can adjust our behavior. I agree. But there's, of course, a lot of sensational news out there. And, you know, WHO was from the beginning talking about we're not fighting only the pandemic. Mainly we are fighting the infodemic, because the information is being shared and spread in real time. Now, people who remember SARS pandemic or, you know, epidemic, it was really different back then because it was, you know, some years ago. And we didn't have that quick of a sharing of information and constantly numbers all the time, right? So we didn't know how many deaths, we didn't know how many cases were confirmed, you know, in the moment when it's happening. So now we're all glued to those news headlines and whatnot. What we all need to pay attention to and to remember is we don't want to have overload of news. We don't want to become paranoid, obviously, and panic. So how do we manage that? So for myself as well, we all should decide about how many times per day do I want to check the news, and limit ourselves to really reliable sources, you know, 2-3, and go there. So it's easy to find it because you know how it looks like, you know where to look for information, you don't spend too much time, and try to avoid what we call anxious scrolling, you know, just scrolling down, looking more. That is not good. It just gives you more anxiety. It doesn't give you more information, okay? And, you know, news is repetitive. So the moment you see, like, you're actually watching the same news, like, for 20th time that day, it happens to me as well.
Yeah.
I'm a CNN addict. Then I'm like, oh, come on. You know, like, you heard this before. Like, nothing much is happening right now. So I think limit the number of times you go in and look for it. Decide what is the time of the day when you're doing that. And then limit yourselves to only reliable sources and avoid anxious scrolling.
That's amazing advice.
Yeah.
Continuing on the line of anxiety and kind of, this dynamics with it, I have a question which can be interpreted in two ways. So in one way is, how can we deal with our family being very anxious about the situation and kind of translating the stress onto us? And on the other hand, how can we deal with us being very anxious about our families if we're separated from them and we're really worrying about their situation?
Look, let's agree that we're all more anxious than usual at this time, right? We're more tired and we're more anxious at the same time. With family, of course, these are the people that, you know, we care the most about and we care a lot about. And if we are separated at this time, of course, we are more worried for each other. At your age, you're worried maybe about your parents and maybe more grandparents because of their age now, because of the information that we have about the virus and how it affects people. And, you know, they will all naturally be worried about you because that's what parents do. That's what grandparents do. So I think it's also a sign of caring. So, you know, caring always goes with worry. So that's okay. I'd say, you know, just, you know, we all should be mindful of, like, best way is to have direct information from the people that you're anxious about. And it's also good to give them information about your life and how you're feeling. So just to set aside some time to have, you know, regular contact with family. If you're worried about your mom, dad, your grandma, grandpa, call them, you know, send them a message, hear from them. Don't assume and then freak out and then you call them and you're already like panicking and crying and just like it's a mess, okay? Because then they don't know what's happening with you. I think really like be in touch because of being in touch and how much that really means to everybody, but also because you're getting the information from the source. That's it.
Right. Yeah, I think that's, I'm going to start doing that more. I know my parents, they ask me to stay in touch every day. So my mom keeps calling me every day. And I just, it's really funny because every time she tells me, she says, oh, so what's up with you? And I'm, mom, like nothing. I'm just, I sat on my chair. I laid on my bed. I watched Netflix. I did some homework just
and
like yesterday.
And she wants to hear and use her anxiety, please. So just do it. Your mom, would you...
Yeah, I agree. I'm gonna change my mentality based on this conversation. So thank you for that.
Thank you.
Something that I have been noticing with a lot of people that I've been talking to, especially students from first, second, and third year, is that they're really sad about their summer plans because we're all applying for internships. I wouldn't want to make this assumption, but I would think that a lot of third year students, especially we, at least in my case, I always thought, freshman year, why do an internship? I'm a first year. Sophomore year, it's still sophomore. If I get it, cool. If I don't, oh well, and I didn't get it. But then third year, I said, okay, this is the year I'm going to do my internship. This is, because it's the year before you graduate. So the summer internship, it's, I would guess, pretty important, at least from my perspective. And I don't know how many people can relate, but I would guess a fair number of amount of people do. What can we do now? How do we deal with these feelings? Should we still be hopeful that something might happen over summer? Should we just accept that nothing is going to happen and start looking at other plans? Any advice on how to do it?
You know, everything you were saying just now, it's something that, you know, I keep talking about to students and obviously also, you know, to myself and my friends. None of us knows now, you know, what exactly will happen. But what I really think is the right way at the moment is, you know, for students especially, is whatever, you know, to see it that way, this way. Whatever is not canceled yet, it's not canceled, okay? So, you know, whatever internship you applied for and you didn't hear from them in terms of cancellation, you know, just pretend that it's still going to happen or just like don't even worry about that now, right? So we need to also be synchronizing the worry and the time at which we are worrying because now it's everything is kind of time sensitive, right? So, and not taking decisions too much ahead of time. And so whatever is not canceled is not canceled. It might be happening. Once it's canceled, you know it's not happening. But to worry about it now, you know, something that is you have locked in for July or August or June even, nobody's mentioning it yet, fine. Okay, maybe Dubai Expo is being postponed because it's a massive event. The Olympic Games are being postponed because it's massive and it's impossible to arrange that now. But, you know, like individual things are individual arrangements. It might just work out. And I know it's difficult, especially for students, because you are, you know, geared for, you know, you should think ahead of time and everybody's after you here to like plan it ahead of time. And now you're like, and now what? You know, because now, like, what are all these plans about? Like, it's just not going through. And so, of course, we all find ourselves thinking, I don't know how to deal with this situation because we are socialized into the opposite. You know, knowing where we're going, planning ahead of time, especially you guys, because you have to have your four-year plans. So that common feeling that you describe, like, sadness, it is in a way, it's a form of grief, it's a loss. You know, it doesn't have to be a loss, a personal loss of a person. We don't only grieve when we lose people, you know, because they die, but we lose opportunities. We lose friendships. We lose experiences. We can also be sad about that, you know. So I think partially people are experiencing grief in that sense now too.
And I think that that connects very well with this next question, which is related to seniors, because just recently we got the news that the commencement was going to be canceled. And I truly, truly do feel for the seniors that this very big event is being canceled because of something outside of our control, something that no one really saw coming. And graduation is very important. So my heart goes out to all the seniors. And do you have any piece of advice for them on how to deal with these unexpected feelings that are coming up?
I must say, just like you said, it's so unfortunate. I absolutely feel for all of them. I feel for us as well, because it's a celebration for all of us. And I love, you know, going to graduation ceremony, and just so, so important. But it's celebration of something that seniors will achieve this year as well, no matter what. So we're going to miss the celebration in the sense of, you know, how we're used to it and how we normally do it. But the achievements and accomplishments we will not miss, because they will still be there. And they're happening right now. And so I want our seniors and all the seniors, wherever they are, to know that it really, that's all that matters. I mean, you know, we would have nothing to celebrate if you know, people were not finalizing their studies and doing these last pushes and, you know, just submitting their capstones and whatnot, like everything, everybody's struggling right now. So I really don't want any senior to feel like, you know, it's not an accomplishment if it's not celebrated. It is an accomplishment, only it's not being celebrated this year, but it doesn't how much they achieved.
I agree, because it is a huge achievement.
Yes, absolutely.
And yeah. We're very proud of our, we're super, super proud of all of our seniors. Kind of changing the route a little bit, and I'm almost done with my questions. I know it's a bit late for you, so thank you so much for bearing with me and doing this. I really think this is going to be helpful for a lot of people, and I hope that it helps at least one person out there. Something, this is a question that relates a lot to me as well, is what are some techniques that you could offer for us to control our eating habits? Because we were talking before we started recording, at least in my case, I had all the food from people who had to leave LA come to my house because I can't go back home. So right now I'm in LA. But that means that I have a lot of junk food with me. And being at home, I don't know if it's an enabling device that I just go around and I'm eating like crap. So sometimes I even stress eat because I have nothing to do. I want to work, but at the same time, I don't want to work. So I end up eating popcorn while drinking Coke while watching Netflix. So do you have any techniques on how to control these kind of stress eating and junk food and just
all of these? You know, it all sounds familiar. We're all struggling with that right now. I think, you know, what really enables that is, you know, lack of structure and just being in more or less one space all the time. And, you know, at times it's boredom as well. So what really helps with regulating anything, including food intake, is a routine. And when it comes to binge eating or, you know, just, you know, cravings and not being able to control. And we all crave sugar and carbs. Nobody craves broccoli. We all know that, right? So in order to prevent those cravings, it's really important to have regular meals and to have regular food intake. That's the best prevention of, you know, binge eating episodes or just, you know, like eating something that you really don't want to eat or like you don't really... you know, it doesn't make you feel good or healthy or whatever. And, you know, it's also now maybe important to remember we should be motivated to, you know, eat healthy food, especially in order to boost our immune system, as opposed to, you know, binging on, you know, like, or eating junk food, and we will probably end up doing that as well. But whenever we have some control, we should try to balance it out, because it's so important to boost our immune systems right now. So I think regular food intake, and maybe just not having all those stocks of, you know, like chips and chocolate and whatever in your corner of the room, but just to outsmart yourself a little bit. And I think leaving the room, if you know, whoever can do that on campus, we can still do it, absolutely. You know, leaving the room regularly, taking a walk, being in a situation where you can just, you know, when you're with people, you might be a little bit more mindful of your eating behavior, so you might not end up doing it as much as, you know, when you're alone and it's all private behavior. So just like making it a little bit more difficult for ourselves to binge eat. And also, if you have proper meals, you will not have that much craving, because your blood sugar is more stable. Levels of sugar are more stable. And that's really important. And it's really important in fighting stress is to, you know, have regulated appetite and to eat regularly, because then the stress hormones are also maintained in a better way. So it, like, there are many benefits of just regular food intake and just being a little bit more mindful of what you're eating, and then you will not end up having cravings as much, and you know, you will be better able to control it.
Right, and I think I'm going to keep in mind now what you just mentioned about thinking that it's going to help our immune system. Yes. I think that's actually that just hit with me. I was like, oh, damn, you're right. Yeah, I actually should do it because of my immune system. So I think I'm taking that with me as well.
Good.
Yeah. So this is my final question, kind of to wrap it all up. We talked a lot about routine and kind of build on better habits, but also on self-care and radical acceptance. What advice would you give to someone who feels like this is too much advice? They feel overwhelmed with the information on trying to stay healthy, self-care, and also work. And how can we get started? How does someone who just, say, listening from this podcast says, okay, I want to change what I'm doing just now, which is I recognize it's not healthy. What would be a first step that you would recommend to someone to start now a better, say, routine in their life?
Look, it's always baby steps, and that's the safest way. We don't want to have too many goals that are not achievable. So I think we should all think for ourselves, to ourselves, okay, like what's the most important thing for me right now that I would like to see change, right? That I have some control over. Like, you know, this week. And then you set a goal, like, oh, I want to regulate my sleep. Great. And I want to do any exercise, some exercise. I haven't moved like in 2 weeks. So these are like good two goals to start with, you know, because regulating sleep, for example, regulates your mood. If your skin is better, like you can focus better on your classes. So you have like five things in one, you know. So we want to do something that's achievable and that is something that, you know we can do. If we now set a goal to become an excellent yogi, you know, within a week, in my case, that wouldn't work. Like, I have not done enough yoga in my life to achieve that, right? So that would be silly. But I can do little things. I can say, hey, I want to do yoga this week. I'll try to do it at least once. And that's already great because, you know, it's more than zero. And I think just really, again, to try to be self-compassionate and compassionate to others every day. I think that's a wonderful goal, and it's a wonderful skill to have, and it's a wonderful, characteristic of being human, and especially in these times, it's so necessary and it's so useful.
I 100% agree about the baby steps, and if anyone is interested on or maybe reading more on how to build habits and good habits and get rid of bad habits, there's this book I read, and I would recommend it to you as well if you haven't seen it. It's called Atomic Habits. It's really, really good. It has really helped me take into account what are the bad habits that I want to take off my life, which in my case was nail biting, which I have gotten way, way better at, and how to build better habits.
That's a big one. Okay.
Oh, thank you. I still fail sometimes, especially when I'm struggling with focusing with online classes, but it's gotten better. So I would recommend that as a cool quarantine reading for anyone who's interested with that. But other than that, Vedrana, thank you so much for doing this. I really do hope that, and I'm sure that this will help people out there. So it's very generous of you to do this. And this is one of those episodes that I'm going to go listen back again, and I'm going to take notes of it, because you gave so much useful information that I need to take some time to process it and look at it again, because this has been truly great. So thank you so, so much for doing this.
Thank you for having me. Thank you for making the effort to reach out and to do it, you know, despite the distance, right? And especially at this time, and I really personally want to do as much as possible to support students, to support members of our community. It's a trying time. It's a weird time, like I said. But, you know, we are still there for each other, and, you know, we should all maximize, you know, our contributions, you know, as much as we can. And this was my way also of doing that. So it was really, really my pleasure. Thank you for having me.
Well, thank you so much. And for anyone listening to this, if you want to reach out, feel free to reach out either to Dr. Vedrana or to me. I'm also happy to talk to people. I enjoy doing that. So thank you, everybody, and we'll talk next time.